All right. Well, cheers. Welcome to the weekly show. Dan, you need to move over a little, I think?
No,
okay. Welcome to the weekly show. And Sean's going to be, Sean, who created the ITJ system that we're using here to broadcast, webcast, is on the chat too. So if there's any problems, just go ahead and say him. He'll try and fix it up. Dan Mellinger, I'm Eli Chapman. Sean Van Avery behind the equipment here. And we're part of the Unmediated crew at unmediated.org, where we blog about various things and put tools and processes that decentralize the media. And, well, we'll fix these problems as they come. So, yeah, we're here to talk about all different sorts of things in the future of media and entertainment, tools and technologies, cool events. And Dan Mellinger here just got back from UbiComp, although you just came from an event. Why don't you just tell us about that event you just came from?
I was just down at NYU on Washington Square Park, caught the John Kerry's latest speech, which was this morning. Very interesting event. Like, it was great. I actually got in through the new Democratic majority, which I'm embarrassed to say I'm not very involved, but I am on their mailing list, and I saw that they had a bunch of free tickets. So I thought I'd attend, first chance to see Kerry live in person. Got in, and it was actually very well put together. Sat in like fourth row center, so got a great view, and you know, it's all supporters, bunch of media, and he gave an interesting speech. It was on policy, basically, where George has gone wrong and where he's going to go right, and all the mistakes in Iraq. And it was actually a lot more forceful than a lot of what I've seen from him in the past. And he laid out basically his Iraq policy and really got down to some issues that I hadn't seen him be as as forceful with before. Yeah, laid down some specific guidelines. I don't want to quote him because I don't have anything in front of me. But it was actually really interesting. And I'm curious to hear if anyone out there was watching. I think it was broadcast probably on C-SPAN. If you guys have any comments on what went down this morning, but
Was there any media there?
Yeah, there was a bunch of media. I mean, I'm not certain whether it was broadcast live, but a bunch of trucks out on the street, Washington Square Park, is a packed auditorium.
Kids with cameras.
There were a lot of kids with cameras, which was really, really cool. And I saw before, during, or not so much during, but before and after, people just with DV cameras walking around, getting interviews. I saw someone, a woman right afterwards, I'm not sure what she was videoing for, but grabbed someone on the street who had just come from sitting on the stage. I believe she was a widow of a guy who passed away on September 11th. And it was just amazing. She was able to just say, excuse me. I overheard her say, yeah, can I ask you a question? The woman was very gracious and, you know, and just grab that footage. And
Steve has a question. He says, kids with cameras are cool, but what are they going to do with all that video?
That's a good question. That's what we're trying to figure out right here, I think. And that's what we try to do. Yeah.
So Steve just asked a question. Kids with cameras are cool, but what are we going to do with all that video? What are they going to do with all that video? So what are your ideas, Dan?
Well,
What would you do?
What would I do? I mean, I think, first of all, it's a great thing, and it's one thing for that video to be collected. And that's, of course, the first step is to get out there and go to these interesting types of events, or even those not so interesting type of events, or events that don't appeal to the masses, but events that are just, you know, interesting to you. Collect that media, and then the best thing to do is make it available to others. I mean, you yourself, you're probably the most passionate about the one who's collecting the media, but there are others who don't have immediate access to the video that was captured. We need to figure out great ways and effective means to share that video, allow others to essentially, you know, do with it what they will, whether it's edited into a piece or categorize it for others to use. I mean, great example is, just like creating a documentary like Outfox. They just took tons and tons of media, had to have it all categorized, all logged. and he just I don't remember the director's name name of that,
Jim,
but
Jim Greenberg, I think. Jim, I can look it up.
But anyway, he you know, he captured all that media himself. He had video tapes rolling 24 hours a day on Fox. Mm-hmm. But if he were able to tap into a well-annotated database of video, and just think of it, how much more powerful that documentary, I mean, as powerful as it was, how much better it could have been just from getting interviews from people outside the realm of what he had immediate access to and easy access to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the setup without Fox is interesting. They used a bunch of TiVos. Robert Greenwald said last minute. That's the director. Yeah. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, last minute. Out Fox, they used quite a few TiVos to basically digitize live feeds of Fox and a variety of things. But yeah, getting back to kids with video cameras, you know, what are they going to do? The truth is they're not going to do much with their tapes. They're just going to put those tapes on shelves. You know, maybe one of them will put together something and show that to friends. But at the moment, there's not an easy way for them to put that video out on the web and share it with people. And there definitely isn't a good way for them to create metadata about that video so that it's easy to find. I mean, if you look at Flickr, for example, Flickr has an excellent system for basically annotating photos and then creating streams of those photos. So, for example, Corey over at Boing Boing, he has a subscription. He subscribes to Flickr feed graffiti. So every morning he just sips his coffee and looks at all the photos that were tagged that last day with graffiti. And he's got this great little channel, the graffiti channel that he looks at every day. And eventually things like that will exist with video, but it's going to take some time. It's going to take people like us, people like the video blogging group on Yahoo, who are interested in solving these problems and making it easier for us to tag up that video, digitize that video, upload, distribute, peer-to-peer, however it's going to get done, and be able to see things. So let's see if we have any other tagged meaning, you know, adding words to describe the video or adding links to the video that help to understand the content of the video or the intent of the videographer or the context of the situation that video came from. So Jay's asking, what about storage and bandwidth? Well, we've got a couple solutions that are out there right now for that. BitTorrent is a peer-to-peer technology for distributing the content. And so if there's a lot of people who have access, who want a particular video, and it is wrapped in a BitTorrent file, then it distributes that across peer-to-peer, cutting down on that load that would come from, if I have a video on my server and you all want to watch it, everyone's going to be downloading it. So, but in terms of storage, you know, the truth is at the moment storage isn't such a big issue because we're talking about short videos. But if you're talking hundreds and hundreds of hours, storage becomes an issue. Last Minute says that his TypePad site is 905% over the bandwidth limit. Well, Last Minute, sounds like you need to have your own server. Sounds like, I don't know how much you're spending on TypePad, but you might want to go with an installation of movable type that's free, the 2.7 version, and your own server.
This is Screensaver's technical help call-in show now? I don't know. That's not what we're here for. Right. No, but actually there was I don't know if any of you out there are subscribed to the Interesting People email list, but there was a post on there today where this Microsoft has some corporate, not necessarily sponsored, but accepted and published blogs, and they were complaining about how they were, you know, these blogs were using up way too much bandwidth, and it's one of the news stories today. I mean, if Microsoft's complaining, it can only imagine.
You mentioned DV Guide.
DV Guide. Who brought the Unmediated brought that up. Yeah, it's that's an application that we're working on. URL is dv.open4all.info. And that's just one of the tools is kind of an example of helping bring BitTorrent to the masses. Because right now BitTorrent, it's great and it works really, really well, but it's kind of clodgy, kind of tough to like get things up and running, and for a novice, newbie, or even like someone who's very experienced and just doesn't have all the time in the world, it becomes a difficult platform to use. That problem, I think, is quickly going away. There's tons of new tools coming out all the time, and it's just a matter of, you know, those getting some usage and people figuring out what are the good features to keep in them and what are the bad features to get rid of and stuff. Yeah, sure.
So Jay asks, have you guys heard of openmedia.org? Yeah, we have. And actually, Dan and I were both at the micro-content dinner with Mark Cantor on his road trip, his R-Media, and as he calls it, the digital lifestyle aggregation road trip he's taking, a road show, where he's I think right now he's in Europe. He was in Paris. He was in Amsterdam. He was in London. And yeah, and as Jay is saying right now, rmedia.org is a project with a few people, TJ Lasica, or JD Lasica, Jay Deadman, Mark Cantor, a few other people are creating this project called rmedia.org, and basically it's a centralized access point to all of the open source media that's available. It's working in collaboration with archive.org. To store the media. So archive.org is Brewster Cahill, who created Alexa. He got quite a bit of money selling that to Amazon, and he created archive.org as sort of the internet's archive, the world's archive. And yeah, free storage forever. He's got these great petabyte machines, which are just thousands and thousands of gigabytes of storage, and you can upload videos. You can set up your own account there and FTP videos to them. Anyone can do that, but your video has to then be open for access to anyone. And I think that's fantastic. There's a lot of problems with our media because it's not addressing the problem of the people who are shooting video, how they're going to get that video onto the web, and how are they going to create useful metadata to have that video easily searched for and located. Our media does solve the problem of creating a central resource to tap into open source media, we can call that. Media, whether it's created by you or I, that I'm saying go ahead and mix and mash and reuse it, or open media that's on archive.org, like propaganda films from the 50s or training videos, whatever they might be, but it's the beginnings of a solution. But I don't think there's enough people addressing the immediate solution. Jay's asking if you know about the work being done with iPotter, Adam Curry and Dave Weiner. Yeah. Do you know that?
I know a little bit about
it. I think that's what Adam is syndicating.
I think it's essentially, and Jay, you might even know more about this than I do, because I think you brought it up when we were talking a couple weeks ago. But it's essentially, I think, a system that will automatically download audio from the web, from a blog, via RSS, and then allow you to sync it to your iPod. Is that, I don't know. I think that's something like what it is. And it's really interesting, because it's, audio is lower bandwidth restrictions, so it's kind of a nice place to start with large media objects. And is my hand in the way? Okay, sorry. Everyone wants to see my face, I guess. You're getting a lot of complaints about that? No. So it's a nice place to start because it's a lot easier. The files are a lot easier to work with, both from the back-end side and from the front-end side, the user side of getting those media objects. So audio is a nice place to start, and also easier to manage those files. So it's interesting to see some tools that are coming out to allow for that. I found that interesting because up until now, a lot of the tools that are coming out are almost agnostic as to what kind of media file you're grabbing. It could be audio, or it could be video, or it could be a PDF. Like Adam Curry, for probably around 6 months now, has included RSS enclosures on his blog, and what that allows him to do is to include BitTorrent files on his blog and allow people to download the torrents basically either automatically or on demand. And the software overall is agnostic as to what kind of media it is, but he's, doing some things to make it easier for people to use this media with iPods, which are, near ubiquitous in the techie community. A lot of people have access to them and, are excited to use them. So it's kind of a nice way to get out to the masses, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, Jay just mentioned on the chat that BattleTorrent, I think it's battletorrent.org. I'm not positive of the website. Maybe Jay can chat that in. It's a group in Worcester, Massachusetts, and it's basically an easy. It's BitTorrent, when you don't know about it, that's when it's going to be popular. And I think that's 6 months, maybe 9 to 12 months away. But you know, BitTorrent just came out. And here it is, and it's already getting popular. And it's just going to take a little time for the technology.
4 years old, actually. I think it's been around for quite some time. It's only becoming popular now, though.
Right. And as it becomes adopted, there's developers out there are going to solve the problem of just, you know, no one needs to know anything about BitTorrent. They just need to know that if they click this button, their video is going to get sent, and they don't have to worry about it. Jay the other day linked to a project that I worked on for a couple of years at a company called Javu Technologies. And we created a bunch of tools and a bunch of technology that would have been perfect for video blogging. It's just that the market for video blogging didn't exist at the time, and the company went under. Since Steve Garfield and Jay, who are both in the chat room right now, linked to it and we're talking about it on the video blogging group, I thought I'd just sum it up. Basically, we had a server that could process video. It could take any kinds of video files. You could mark in and out points in those video files and then create new video files. So in a sense, it was just an EDL, meaning edit decision list, a way to process edit decision lists. We created browser-based tools using just HTML and JavaScript where you could watch a video in different formats and make in and out points and then save that new clip that you've created as a piece of metadata, as a link, basically. And it was a very good tool. It was being used by broadcasters and by marketing departments who had a central library of video and wanted to... Jay's asking if we can get access to the tool. The answer is no, unfortunately. The company, all of the intellectual property got stored up and shelved, and as of now, there's no access. I've actually put in word to the owners of the company and asked, since they haven't sold the company by now, if they're interested in sending it out there. To tell you the truth, though, it could be recreated. Someone suggests we should steal it. Yeah, it's not a bad idea, but I didn't say that. But basically, the technology to create to mark an in and out point is easy. You can take Windows Media SDK and create and augment the player with an in and out function. It's not hard. That's what we did. The hard part is creating new video files out of that, but that's not necessarily important. If you look at WebJ, Lucas Gon's project. You don't want to create new files. You just want to link to things, and you want to create links within video files, and that's really the piece that's missing right now. So, I think that tool is emerging. It's going to come out soon, whether it's from us or people in the video blogging group or others. But we lost the chat window, so we can't see if there's any questions.
Jay asks, could you have 4 chat windows up and record the whole screen for 20 minutes as QuickTime? He's talking about making this a multi...
Sure, yeah. So Jay, and Steve was asking earlier, could we do video conferencing while we're doing this?
So one of the things that I've been saying is...
We're going to pass... Oh, okay.
Just repeat it.
Okay, Sean's talking.
Interactive telejournalism TV
application. Right.
Sure,
yeah, so we absolutely could do that. I mean, for example, Sean is looking at a window right now that if we could encode what he's seeing simultaneously, it would record the sessions, the multiple chat sessions. Problems with that involve then synchronizing multiple video feeds.
Yeah, feeds from
Jay
over at M&M.
Okay, so the idea is, can we have a multiple participant interactive telejournalist session like we're doing right now? So we could have a camera with Jay right now at M&N, a camera with Steve over in Boston, a camera with Adam Curry in Amsterdam, and a camera here. We could simultaneously be watching the 4 screens and chatting in one window simultaneously. Is that making sense? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. I think... I don't know, it makes me think about what are the differences between, we're used to, and maybe we're too much stuck in this model of watching TV and sitting back on a couch. And now we're getting interactive with this, and we're doing some exciting stuff right now. It's a couple steps above what we've seen on traditional TV with people sort of, you know, maybe on MTV sending in little text messages or, you know, getting on their AIM client and sending stuff in. But it is still this, a little bit of an ivory tower, like we're sitting in this garden and you know, we're the only people that those guys at home are seeing. When you switch that to the other model, it sounds a lot like a video conference to me, where there's no, you know, there's no hierarchy. And that's really interesting. I mean, that's great. One question is how well does it scale? I mean, it would be great to have a couple feeds, which is what we did for the RNC, 2.5 weeks ago. But, when you start having, you know, more than 4 or 5 feeds, it gets to be too much for, I think, a viewer to switch between or to remain aware of all the time. So, you know, you need sort of to strike a balance. And I think a dream I have is, you know, that possibly that balance would be struck based on the program itself or the system behind the program being somewhat intelligent and knowing who someone wants to watch and who someone wants to hear. But you do need filters in there, and right now we're creating an artificial filter of, you know, being over here, and you have to come to this, you know, to Second Street and First Avenue in order to be a part of, you know, the video stream. But
But Jay's saying right now that there's only 50 people who put up video on a regular basis in the whole world. Uh-huh. And first of all, Jay, that's not right. That's ridiculous. I mean, 50 people that you know about, but that's only because the people who are putting out video, first of all, don't necessarily want you to watch it. Second of all, the people who are putting out video they don't necessarily care about other people watching it besides the people they're linking to. But there's way more than 50 people who are using video cameras on a daily basis. I mean, think about how many cameras are on in the United States. I mean, we're talking, you know, camcorder adoption in the U.S. has almost reached 50%. So that's, you're talking of households. So you're talking 50 million people have access to video cameras right now. How many are using them regularly? Well, let's say 1% of the 50 million. So we've got something like 500,000 camcorder users, or weekly at least, maybe even daily, shooting a little something. These could be high school kids. They could be parents. They could be community members. But this isn't professional video. This is just consumer home users, people, citizens using video cameras. The question is, first of all, why do they want to share their video over the web? What's the point of them sharing the video over the web? Are they trying to target people within their community? Are they trying to target their friends? Can they not do that already? And what's the world going to offer them that makes them all of a sudden want to participate in this new medium where people share video on a regular basis? Last Minute says right now, getting access to cameras is one thing, putting it online is another. I agree 100%. And if you talk about the John Kerry thing today, tons of people have cameras. They're going to go home with their tapes, and they're going to sit on their tapes. Maybe someone will make a documentary, but they're not going to put it online. And it's something that has to come out. It's a technology that has to be in the hands of these people. They have to have an easy way to share their video, and there has to be a reason for them to share their video. They have to see the reward, whether it's through people talking about it, watching, or giving them feedback of them sending that video into the world.
I on Unmediated, we talk a lot about getting the media capture device closer to the network, and we're always really excited when we see either a device or a piece of software that can basically bridge the gap between that media capture device, be it a still camera, a digital video camera, or, you know, an audio recorder, and the network. And one device that I see as pushing that forward really, really quickly, and it's obviously happening with photos, is the mobile phone. And here in the States, it's you know, they're talking a lot about camera phone penetration, and, you know, people can get those pictures on the web. In Asia, and I think it's more compelling because we're talking a lot about video today, they're talking a lot about video phone penetration. And if Jay's question about 50 people in the world, I mean, I would bet that there is at least 100 to 1,000 times that many people putting video over an internet protocol network at this very moment in Japan. People are video conferencing on a regular basis, and those are bits going across the network, and they're one-to-one, they're peer-to-peer right now, as far as I know, I'd be interested to hear of any applications. I haven't heard of too many. It's so hard to get information about great mobile applications in Japan. But, you know, those are bits and bytes, and those could just as easily be, you know, broadcast if the right software was put in front of those networked, you know, capture devices.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe the problem, maybe we're trying to solve the wrong problem here by getting the people who use camcorders to put their video online. We've already got people who are putting video online with their little video clips from video phones. Yeah, Jay says there's no access point to get in. I agree. There's no access point with a video camera. Yeah, you can buy or download for free FFmpeg or Media Cleaner or QuickTime Pro. And you can there's a lot of free DV editing software. Avid Free DV, just Google Avid Free DV. It's free if you have a PC. There's iMovie if you have a Mac. Both of those allow you to plug in a camera. Ooh, I just lost my computer.
Out of power?
I guess so. I don't think so though. Both iMovie and Avid Free DV are programs that will allow you to plug in your camera, they'll recognize your camera, they'll let you digitize what you've got, and once it's there, it's a high resolution file, so you got to shrink it if you're going to share it, and you can get QuickTime Pro or various free transcoding softwares, packages that are out there, and make a QuickTime movie. Then you got your QuickTime movie. Well, if you have a Typepad or a Blogger or some sort of server, you can upload it. Yeah, there's got to be a better way to upload it and a better way to mark it up with information about what you're shooting and why.
Last minute wants to know, how do I search for video from an event that I was at?
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay, last minute asked, how do I search for video from an event that I was at? Well, I'll tell you how to. If we look at photos, Flickr, FLICKR.com, you can do that on Flickr because a lot of people are using Flickr right now. For example, at the RNC, there was an event called Critical Mass where a lot of bicyclists... FLICKR, Flickr.com. Flickr is basically a photo archive where people with metadata. So it gives you an easy way to upload photos and then to mark them up with words that are representative of what the video was. So say you were at the John Kerry speech today at NYU. You could mark up John Kerry. You could mark up the word NYU. You could mark up New York City. You could mark up the date. Well, I'm giving you an example with photo. This is the sort of thing that needs to be created with video. You've got events that people go to with cameras. You see them there. Then you go to the web, and it's how do I find them? Well, with blogging, you know, Feedster.com. You can look through Feedster and search for a particular word, and it'll tell you the most recent blog entry about that word. So if someone's blogging, if someone posts a link to their video in their blog and they describe what that video was and the event that it's from, when that's posted, Feedster is going to have it, and you can search through Feedster and find the video you're looking for. So that's one way to do it today. But look, tomorrow I think there's all sorts of things that can be created. For example, if I'm going to an event, before I go to that event, I've already maybe emailed someone what that event is, or I know what it is in my head. That information needs to be on that videotape while I'm shooting. That's why camera phones are pretty interesting. They're computers, basically, so that you can store a little bit of text regarding where you were. It can store your GPS information regarding where you were. It can store the time of day regarding where you were. And so when you upload that video, you have a better chance of other people finding it.
So Jay says, so with video, we need collaborative video spaces like video comments so people can use video together.
Yeah, Jay says that we need collaborative video spaces like video comments so people can use video together. I agree, and there has to be a resource out there that lets that comment function happen transparently, like we need BitTorrent to happen transparently. But even then, you're not necessarily describing what's on that video in a way that people are going to search for it. So you can either tell people to search differently, or you can either let it fit into the current search paradigm, which involves keywords and using things in quotes and letting people search on that in that way. Dan, you have something to add?
No, go ahead.
I mean, if you look at video comments, that's a solution for if everyone could get their video online. But that doesn't exist. No one's putting their video online. Jay says there's 50 people. To get people to put their video online, what are you going to do? Well, one is you can augment the camera. either with a device or you can augment it at the desktop when you're digitizing with a little bit of a client that lets you add metadata about that video or discover video metadata about that video. Then you need to, when you send that video out to the web, whether via BitTorrent or just upload it to your server, there needs to be a text file associated with it that describes that video. And that text file is what needs to get sent to a Technorati or to a Feedster as the ping that resonates across the web with words that people can search for and find. Then I search for John Kerry NYU and the date. I find the video clips that I'm looking for, and I can make a comment like, well, did you see what he said about Iraq? I totally disagree, blah, 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 and here's some video I have to prove it. That's a new way to do it. But until then, you're just going to have a small community of people who are chatting amongst themselves, and it's not going to grow because there's not a good way to let other people into that community, not a good way to show them how they can get involved and why participation is important and something they can do.
Last Minute says that the only thing the web knows about my video is the URL of the file. What is the web? And the web is a sequence of URLs that connect to each other. But one thing I think that can change that, and I think that's kind of true right now, is the RSS and the being able to put files and link to files in RSS, because now no longer do you have to go and find that URL or a link to that URL. If you're a member of a community, and I like to call like RSS feeds almost, you know, pseudo communities, because they're a group of, you know, you're by looking at it part of a community of users who are interested in that topic. And by associating video with that, it becomes more than just a link sitting in space, and it becomes something that has some context behind it, something that has some, Eli was talking a lot about the data, specifically about the video itself, but what about the context in which that video sits? And I think that's also another interesting way to find that video. It's partly through that metadata and partly through who else wants to see that video. You know, if it's on an RSS stream, it's there for a reason, because the people who are interested in other stuff on that RSS stream are also interested in that video.
A practical thing you can do today, Last Minute, to get your video seen is, number one, name your video with underscores, with words that you think are relevant to describe that video. So John_Kerry_New York_NYU, for example, dot, whatever it is. Another thing you can do is make a JPEG image out of that RSS, out of that video, that represents what's on the video, and upload it to Flickr using tags, words, to describe what's on that video. So people will find that photo, and you can have a comment attached to that photo, which is a link to your site where the video is, and people will find it through Flickr. If they're interested, they'll click through and go to your blog. Another thing you can do is you can find communities and blogs that are out there that have an interest in what your video is, and have posts on their blog that are relevant to what you're doing, and comment on that post and say, hey, I agree with what you're saying, or I disagree with what you're saying, and check out the video I made over here.
Jay out there alluded to it before, but I've been playing with this stuff for about 8 months now, because I just did my master's degree at ITP at NYU, and like, as part of that, I wanted to build a set-top box that would allow me to do these types of things, basically bypass the big networks. That's the core of the idea. But in doing that, I looked at a lot of different technologies, and one of them was this RSS BitTorrent enclosures video combination. And the tools are still not, you know, as we were saying, completely for every consumer, but it can be done right now. I have a box sitting on top of my TV that allows me to browse through video that I've downloaded automatically with RSS, BitTorrent, and enclosures with my remote control sitting on my couch, and it's not that hard. Yeah, Jay's got to come over to my place sometime this week when I can find some time and check it out. And I'm excited to share it. It looks like, you know, it looks a bit like crap, but that's because it's just beta at this point. I've got a phone call.
I wonder if it's... Well, Dan's, it doesn't really look that bad at all. It actually looks really cool. It's a small little plastic box Dan built. That's a PVR with a little extra functionality, including the downloading of RSS enclosures. And, it's capable today. The problem is, where is that resource on the web to locate the RSS that you want, that has video you want in it? You know, if you could subscribe to an RSS feed that covered a whole range of subjects, like if you were interested in electronic voting, and there was RSS text feeds and video feeds and photo feeds out there that had to do with e-voting, and you could just subscribe to that feed, and every day you're getting, you wake up, you've got your video, and you can watch it on the remote. You know, that's excellent, but that's not there yet, and that's something that's got to be created. So, let's see, any other questions? Kenyatta is asking.
The TV. No, it's not right now, though. I'd like to do it. I'm still a Linux newbie, so I'm trying to figure that out. I've been trying to get Linux up and running, and I've tried. I've tried it for anyone who's familiar with it. I've been trying NotMyth with my set-top box, but I haven't gotten that up and running yet. Right now it's running, the core of the browser is running on an application called Sage TV. It's sage.tv. I'll send out the URL right now. It's actually commercial software. It's like $60, but it was the best thing out there at the time when I checked it out, which was... a couple months ago, and it's pretty sweet. It was easy because it just runs on Windows XP. It's a no-brainer install. But you know, all it needs to be able to do in order to allow this whole RSS BitTorrent enclosure thing to work is scan a video folder and present those as a menu on your TV screen. Obviously, there are advanced features that we'd want in the future, but for you know, to get it working, that's all you need. And I believe you can even do that these days with something that you can go to CompUSA and get like a Linksys box that just scans a video folder and presents it as a menu on your TV screen. So, you know, the thing is, right now it takes me at least five pieces of software to get this thing up and running. When it becomes one or two, I think, you know, and some off-the-shelf hardware, which I only have like, I think, one add-on piece of hardware, which is an MPEG encoder decoder. But when it becomes, you know, a piece of hardware and a piece or two of software, then it becomes really easy, and we're really close to that. There's not much else that needs to be done. It's just getting the user interface right, and the audience will expand as it gets a little easier to use, and as it's tailored to the different types of uses that the audience wants to use it for.
I have a question for Dan. What do you think about, because Dan just came back from UbiComp, which is a conference dealing with mobile social technologies. How hard would it be to add RSS enclosures that are automatically made on a camera phone that's shooting video, so that when you're done with shooting the video, it's already got the RSS feed or maybe even the BitTorrent ready to go?
I don't know about making from the camera phone side. You could do it, but I don't know how interesting that would be. I mean, you could make the... you know, the files that are posted as a blog, but I mean, you can already do it with a Moblog. The question, Sean, is how could you have it so a video camera phone could create RSS easily?
Well,
and you said like on the camera,
post
right?
It to something that would create the RSS.
Right.
Right.
I have 90% of
the app. Sean was just saying that. You could post it to something that would create the RSS. I mean, you do it now with Moblogs, with photo blogs, and you can create
about
that.
Your,
my box online. I don't have a make your own. No, I'm sorry. I will type in a second the URL to like my thesis site, which explains a little bit about the process I went through and stuff. What's that?
Go ahead and say it.
Read it out for the archives.
Okay. Yeah. It's my thesis site is off of massive-media.org, and I'll type that in right now. But it's, unfortunately I don't have a do-it-yourself, but it's, as I said, Clodgy, and I basically change the software I'm using every week or so. So I have, because new things are always coming out, and I'm always trying new PVRs. As my wife can attest to, like, we had this whole argument last night. I don't know if she just logged on or not. But we were talking, I just IM'd her to get on, but uh, we you know, there's a thing about TiVos and PVRs, and I don't know how many of you guys have them set up, but I'd been reading about them and reading about how they change your life, reading David Pogue and all that shit, and seeing, you know, and people say, oh, they change your life, they change the way you consume media, blah, blah, blah. They really do. And so I had one installed, and very, very quickly it became not just a nice to have, but a need to have. And from the beginning, I told Anne that I don't fully support it. It's not a supported application in our home. I will, you know, try to make sure it's up and running, but there's no guarantees there. And so last night I was installing a new PVR, and I said, it might not work. It might not bring all your favorites over. And she got mad. So I don't know, you know, I may have to bring that over for her. But that's the thing. The point is I've been changing it all the time. There's always new stuff coming out. And I'm also trying to find something other than Sage TV to use that runs on Windows XP, because I want to make it easy for most people. But I want to find something other than Sage TV that might be free. And there is something, the thing I was messing around with last night, I think it's called GB-TV, something like that. I'll Google it in a second. But it's free, and one of the really cool things about it is that it supports plugins. So that would be a really great platform, and I'd love to see it, because people are doing it for Myth TV already, making a plugin that does RSS BitTorrent streams, and I'm not sure how well it's working. I'd be interested to hear. I think Kenyatta's work is playing around with that.
Jay's got a question.
But that would be a really interesting thing to try. I haven't messed with that yet.
Jay wants to know if we can get people.
Go ahead and read Jay's
question. Jay says, how do we get people in other countries to talk to each other? Are developing countries going to be able to support this stuff? That's one of our goals, is to make this and, you know, make our community larger and get other countries involved in what we're doing. And I don't know. One of the really big issues in other countries is the availability of web terminals and broadband. Now in some first world countries, it's quite easy, and in a lot of instances easier than the U.S. But because there's more bandwidth available. Still, personal computer penetration is very different in the U.S. from how it is around the rest of the world. So there's two issues there. One being PC penetration, the other being internet bandwidth and access to the internet. In the U.S., I don't know, bandwidth penetration is something like 20% and growing, which is pretty cool. Broadband penetration, I mean. In some Scandinavian countries, it's even higher, plus they have something like crazy 10 megabit per second connections for like $25 and $35, as I was reading a couple of weeks ago, just being launched. But that's one interesting thing, though. There are ways to get around both of those hurdles, and that's why we're exploring. One of those being the mobile phone as your gateway onto this world of video and rich media. And the other is BitTorrent and things like that. And the reason for that is BitTorrent jumps over the bandwidth hurdle, because it's, you can't do things like this with it because you can't do live things. But if you have the time and the lower bandwidth to allow you to download things overnight, then for delayed viewing, BitTorrent works and allows you to get around some of the bandwidth issues.
In terms of developing countries, I mean, currently, I don't think that can be done. I mean, you see text blogging being very successful in Iran, for example. There's a revolution going on, and text blogging is helping give a voice to that and spreading the word about it. Photo blogging, still not so big, but starting. People like Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com sending digital cameras to people in Iraq, letting them show their photos of what's happening. But I think the problem is that we can't even solve the problem here in the U.S. So how is a developing country going to solve it? I think it has to start here. It has to start with the demands of the people who want to be able to share video and comment on it and create this new social medium around video here in the U.S. tools will develop that do work for anyone, and those tools will get sent out. There's groups like witness.org. Witness is all about sending people with video cameras to developing countries and helping those people share the problems that exist in that community with the world and giving a voice to those people. If there's a way to do it here in the U.S. and create video easily that can be shared online, and then those tools can be given to Witness, and Witness can take those things and bring them to developing countries, that's how it can happen. It can get introduced in that way.
Let's do like a two-minute, what is
the
show, what are we doing?
Sure. All right, so just as we wrap, okay, so just to give everyone an idea of what the weekly show is going to be, it's a presentation of Unmediated, unmediated.org. We're going to be doing a weekly session like this, except we're going to bring in people not from the Unmediated crew, but rather from around the blogosphere and thinkers in the media technology and citizens media industry. We're going to give the audience a chance to talk to them and see what happens. Yeah, we have a post on unmediated.org that describes a little bit about what we're doing today. We're going to follow it up, though. This was sort of a beta test run, see how it works and how people respond to it to get a sense of what we need to do for now. But we're looking at bringing people like Clay Shirky and Jeff Jarvis and, make suggestions. Tell us who you want us to bring in. We'll contact them. Ken Yada Cheese from Unmediated is going to come in and talk about his new PVR project. Drazen Pantic from Unmediated is going to come in, talk about DV Guide and what's going on there. Jay Deadman hopefully will come in from MNN, talk about the video blogging group and, you know, his hands-on experience trying to get people video blogging and what video blogging is like himself. And just generally, we're going to be doing it weekly, hopefully from a place like this here in New York, where we've got Wi-Fi and we have access to the ability to get inebriated. Yeah, suggestions. You can send us emails. You can send them to unmediated@gmail.com.
Can they post on Unmediated?
And you can post comments in the post that I've posted at Unmediated, which if you go today to unmediated.org or just do a search for Unmediated and then in quotes the weekly show on Google in a couple of days, you'll probably be able to get right to that post. Tell us what you want to hear and who you want us to put in front of the camera, and you'll have access to them for an hour and be able to ask some questions and see what they talk about. Are there any specific questions that we've got going?
People are asking how can it be more participatory? How can we, as I was saying, we're in an ivory tower
right
here, and that's not really what we want to be. We want to make it more participatory. How could we do that?
Well, I think that, look, we're only going to be able to get as participatory as you guys want to make it. So if you have questions, if you want people you want to talk to, then that you need to tell us, and you need to post that either in the comment thread on the post that's been posted, or we'll set up a new one, or via email at unmediated@gmail.com. But at the beginnings, this is really a forum for the audience to be able to speak with different people in the field directly. You can do it on their blog. They might be able to comment back to you. But here's a way where you can just see them and talk to them directly. And we'll see where it expands to. Hopefully we do get it to a point where we're able to have a couple of these setups in different cities, and we're able to do a more multi-participant video version of this. But text is still going to be the predominant medium for participation in terms of conversation, but we'll be able to do smaller conversations, a smaller scale version of them in forums like this. And as we do them, we'll get better at it. We'll develop the technology that can help augment and expand it, and we'll start to involve more people.
What is your setup there? How is it working?
So Last Minute is asking about the setup of what exactly we're doing. I'll give a rundown, and if I'm incorrect, Sean, who developed the system, will take it over. But basically, we have a DV camera that has FireWire out connected into a laptop. The camera's sitting on a tripod. The audio is just this little microphone here plugged directly into the camera. The feed is going through FireWire into a Mac titanium 11-inch laptop. Which is a 12-inch, which is running QuickTime Broadcaster. It's encoding at a couple, 100 and something kilobits per second. maybe 200, audio at about 20. That's being sent to a QuickTime server. And then the chat application that you're chatting with us has been developed by Sean Van Avery. The whole setup has been. And it's basically just going to allow us to see what's being chatted about while we're being shot here, and as well as allowing you to ask questions directly to us. Okay, and Sean's telling me to add that it was developed to have multiple setups like this out in the field and have all of those feeds coming back to a central resource where they're being selected for broadcast live on the air. So in other words, there can be a TV show that consists of, say, four different cameras out in the field. The audience can see what's on all four and can ask questions directly to whoever's in front of the camera. And then there's a switch that happens, and there's a live version of the show that's including sort of the best of the moment of what's happening, and that's being broadcast out over the air.
Thousands of people can participate.
Yeah, Sean's adding thousands of people can participate. Just anyone can log in over the web, see what's happening, ask the questions that they want asked, and then there can be a televised version that also goes out so that hopefully people who are on their couch watching TV go, wait a second, that guy's really interesting, I want to ask a question. They can go to their PC or whip out their laptop and log in, open up the chat window, and say, hey, what about this? And the camera person or the telejournalist, whoever's in front, who's ever doing this mediation here, basically can say, here's the question from the audience.
Sean has used this the platform a bunch of times. One of the most recent was at our Conscious RNC production, which was 2.5 weeks ago, and it was kind of a good test of it because it was the first time that it was broadcast on a public television network. We had done it on NYU's TV network once, but it was interesting because we were able to get it out to the public. There was two screens. You didn't necessarily have to be on the computer. You also didn't necessarily have to be at the TV watching on cable. And the interesting thing with that is, yeah, it brought in that other stuff, putting chat on the bottom of the screen to sort of entice people to get more involved interactively. But basically, there were two different ways of accessing it, and people were able to use the program however they felt most comfortable using it. And that was also proof of concept. We had some bugs, but overall, things went really, really well. And it was great. It was a great test of that software. So what do we talk? We're all talking about technology in the chat room right now, huh?
I can talk a little about the RNC until someone says something.
Okay, yeah. Eli wants to talk a bit about the RNC.
Yeah, just to give the real-world implementation we did last week or 2 weeks ago at the RNC had four setups like we're doing now, one in Madison Square Garden and three out in the field. And basically, it worked. We had, using Wi-Fi, we were interviewing people based on questions from the audience. All feeds were being sent back to Sean at MNN, he was able to choose the feeds to go out on the air, show the text from the chat room of the questions that were being asked, and switch in between them. And it really was a low-cost, easy way to have a TV show that's as dynamic in terms of location and participation as anything anyone's ever offered. And, there's a site, lostremote.com, which is a great blog that covers emerging technologies in the TV industry. They talked about, they linked to the RNC project, conscious.tv, but they also talked about this guy who's a Wi-Fi journalist. And really what he was doing was sort of, it was a Wi-Fi, a way for him to shoot some video of what he's reporting and send it up to the station so they could show it. But it was not interactive and it wasn't participatory. I mean, what we were doing really allowed the audience a chance to ask the questions. And yeah, it's still limited to that linear 30-minute TV show. And yeah, we can only show the one feed at a time. But those are limitations with the way people watch TV today, or the limitation of the medium itself. On the web, you could have chosen your feed and seen it, and yeah, we could expand it so that.
The point was we got people off
there. Yeah, the point was that there was interaction with the content. There was interaction with the people, with the show, and it was journalism and participation at the same time, in a way that blogging is, not in a way that video has been. And it's a sign of what can come. And really, we look at it as a stepping stone towards the future of media entertainment, which we think is participatory, which is decentralized, and which is a place where audiences entertain, educate, and inform themselves, rather than being handed it from the one person who is in control of the medium.
That's a good point. And it gets back to the purpose of Unmediated, which is decentralizing the media and making sure that instead of it being those gatekeepers who have their own interest in mind, it's the general interest of everyone involved as to what they get to see. And, you know, we'd love to keep an eye on exactly what tools and what people are doing what in that realm. And there's, yes, tons of interesting stuff going on. Was Jay asking us to wrap up? Okay.
Yeah, let's just close it off.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us on our first edition of the Unmediated Weekly Show. Yeah, please send any feedback you have to feedback@unmediated.org. We want this to be, you know,
on the blog or the entry,
or post comments on the unmediated.org blog entry. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we have any guests lined up for next week yet, do we?
Yeah,
but we will announce it shortly. Okay, sure.
Last minute, just to answer your question, do you think video blogging will go mainstream? I absolutely do. I don't think it's going to be called video blogging any more than blogging will be called blogging probably in 10 years. But yeah, do I think video is going to become a form of communication and a way that people interact? Absolutely. And I think that what we're doing today and what Unmediated's goal is and what the video blogging groups is and what openmedia.org's mission is, it's to do that. It's to allow video to become an extension of what we're doing today. And it's happening, and we're participating in it right now. And it's going to take conversations about it and work by all of us to make it happen. So we thank you guys for tuning into the weekly show. And we'll see you next week, and we'll announce the guest on unmediated.org at some point soon.
So on.
We need a good tuning out.